You know, there are all kinds of interesting people who live right around your neighborhood. Like, oh, the publicist, the rights distribution manager.
Would you look at that? It's People in Your Neighborhood on 95BFM. Thanks to APRA MCOS NZ.
Oh, hi there.
Shh, listen.
Today, I feel very honoured to have Teresa Patterson in the studio with us. Hi, Teresa.
Oh, hi, Penny. That's very nice of you. I feel honoured.
Now, you've worked with labels, Polygram, which is now Universal, and Virgin. You've worked in publicity management. You're the chairman of the Music Managers Forum.
Yep, I've worked on festivals. I did worked as part of the Big Day Out team for 10 years in Auckland City Limits. I've worked on Soundsplash. Yeah. I think I've done a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Can you tell us how you got started in the music industry?
How did I get started in the music industry?
How did it all begin?
Because that's like about 25 years ago. So I came back from overseas. I'd been living in London for 5 years, and a friend of mine, Mark Phillips, worked at Polygram, and they were looking for... actually someone to work in the PR department, and at that time I just got a job at MyFM selling ads. And see, I told you I've done everything.
Wow, so you've done radio as well. That's
super cool.
I've
done radio as well. And so I was like, oh, I've just got this new job, I won't. But then a sales job came up maybe 6 months later, and he was like, come on, apply. And so I applied and I got the job selling CDs, remember those, into stores. And so I did that for about a year and then got promoted into promotions. And then became a label manager there. Yeah. So that's my start.
What did you do at the label? Kind of who were the artists that you were promoting at the time?
Majority were international artists, so in a real wide range of artists. Like at Polygram, it was from Portishead to Van Morrison to Sting. So there wasn't a massive local roster at that time. Probably the most famous local artist on the roster at the time was OMC. And then at Virgin, it was as wide from the Spice Girls to Chemical Brothers to Massive Attack. So,
wow.
Yeah, a really wide range.
And was the success measured on how many kind of units you sold in record stores?
Yeah, that is exactly how it was. So you'd have a budget, you know, you'd have targets for each of the releases.
Wow. And so it was just like, you went in there and you promoted, like you said, to the people that were buying, hey, this is coming out, this will appeal to this many people and that sort of thing. And
if you were selling into the stores, yeah, you would go in with the marketing plan that had been set up around the release. And, you know, and if the single had been released beforehand and sold lots, then the retailers would know that, you know, the album would sell lots. Obviously, it's all different nowadays.
Yeah, I was going to say, because like, then it would have been really reliant on television and radio play, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And also reviews. You know, like when Graham Reid was writing for The Herald, when Russell Bain and Graham Reid were writing for The Herald back in the day, like a good review from either of those guys would definitely sell albums.
Wow, that's really cool. Yeah, and now it's all just social media.
Yeah, exactly, and streams.
Yeah. And so from there you went into management, is that correct?
I initially left Virgin after 5 years. So I did 10 years at major labels and I started doing PR, and I initially did it for Simon Allardub because they were one of my bands that I worked with at Virgin Records, and I was doing PR for their live shows. And then at that time it was only me and Mark Kneebone that was doing publicity. Actually, no, maybe Bridget Delaunay as well. And and I did like Trinity Roots, Shapeshifter, you know, like album tours. And I was sharing an office with Campbell Smith, and he was getting loads and loads of management requests and couldn't fit it all in, and then sort of said to me, do you want to start managing? And at the same time, I had been the mentor for a Smoke-Free Rock Quest band winner for a TV program that had been, and I'd been brought on by NZ On Air to be their mentor, a group called The Have from Whanganui. And I was like, yeah, I'll give it a go. I'll start managing. And I think my next client may have been Blindspot.
Oh, wow.
Actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Blindspot and Carly Binding, I think, were the, yeah, my next two clients.
And you've managed 660, I Am Giant, Scribe,
yep,
LMNOP, so a lot of major players in the New Zealand industry.
Yeah.
What do you think, like, are the kind of, like, the biggest challenges of being a music manager?
Time. I reckon, nowadays. I mean, it was bad enough back then, you know, managing multiple artists, but nowadays you kind of, you know, because people's consumption is so fragmented, and so you have to hit them. That's not the right word, is it? you need to get at them in so many different ways, and so it's really time intensive, and that would be, yeah, definitely the biggest challenge as well. And managing people, I think, like, as in personalities, I think that was something that I didn't really realise when I first started managing, the whole psychological aspect of it. And that's why something I sort of do is I'm a board member for Music Helps, which is an organisation that helps not only musicians in need, you know, like through the wellbeing service and all that, but also help organisations with funding that use music to help other people. And so, yeah, I'm really pro that sort of thing, just because of the fact that, yeah, when you've got a band, there's obviously lots of personalities in that band, and when they spend a lot of time together, after a while, people get annoyed with each other.
Yeah, it is truly like a marriage, isn't it?
Yes, yep. It is. Yeah.
Yep. And you're also chairperson of the Music Managers Forum.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that for people that don't know?
So it's an organisation, it's a not-for-profit organisation, which has been put together to help new managers or experienced managers or self-managed artists. And it came about, it's actually an international organisation. There's about 14 countries around the world that have MMFs. But it was started in this country actually via Mark Roach about, 15, 16 years ago. And I got involved because I just saw that there were so many talented artists and just not enough managers. And there's not enough managers because we're in a small territory and you're taking 20 or so percent of someone's income. And artists are struggling to live off the income that they are making. So this way, new managers, middle managers, experienced managers, self-managed artists have access to upskilling and seminars, mentoring. I mean, yep. When you were managing Penny, you were part of the MMF.
Yes. And I actually think, like, it's a really good thing to be a part of because you can learn so many different aspects of different things in the industry, and also it's great for networking. Like,
yes.
I remember, like, the first events I went to, and I would be super nervous because I always am very anxious around, like, people when I don't know them. And I would rock up, but everyone was, like, always so friendly and welcoming, but I just would be like, you know.
Yeah.
And the speed networking sessions that the MMF put on are amazing. Like, meeting, you've got one coming up
for festival bookers, yeah.
That one was great, and you do radio plugging ones and everything. It's great.
Yeah. No, and that's just so that members have the opportunity to meet face-to-face with people in the industry that they normally wouldn't be able to as a first step, because, you know, everyone's a bit nervous sending that first email or making that first approach to someone that they don't know.
Yeah. And I think, like, if you do meet them through the MMF, people actually remember you, and then if you send the follow-up email, it's quite good because you've already met the person.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly. Face-to-face contact's amazing. Yeah.
You've also worked on the iconic Big Day Out.
Yes, I have.
Can you tell us a bit about that? Because that's kind of like, I don't know, I certainly know growing up that was like the kind of day of the year, and it's become almost like a magical time and place thing now, you know.
Just sideline, have you read that, have you listened to that podcast?
Yes,
as well?
I have.
So good. Anyway, so that was amazing. That was 10 years of working on the Auckland leg of the Big Day Out, and I think the very first year that we did it, I was managing Scribe and he was on the Australian tour, so it was great. I got to do the, you know, work behind the scenes on the Auckland Big Day Out and then go on and see the rest of the Big Day Outs around Australia, and came back feeling that, you know, the Auckland one was pretty good actually in comparison to the others. And it was just, yeah, it was a great time. It was a lot of work. We would, you know, it's like you'd have to start. I mean, I think the announcers were about in September, so we would be starting to work on them, you know, like June or something. But yeah, it was just great fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, good team.
At the peak.
So loads of great bands.
Yeah, I mean, they were amazing bands.
Yeah.
At the peak, how many people would have gone to the Big Day Out? What would have been the
biggest? 50,000?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was kind of like, I mean, to me, I think growing up, that was like the biggest ever, wasn't it? Like,
yeah.
The thing that was kind of happening other than, I don't know, would Western Springs shows be bigger than that?
Probably about the same now.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was an unusual time, really, when you compare it to today, where there are just so many festivals. You know, there wasn't Spark Arena, there weren't loads and loads of festivals, so it did become a real must-do date in everyone's diaries, because you didn't have something like Spark Arena to have those bands come through and tour. The only time that they could tour was via the Big Day Out.
Yeah, and it was cool because you, even if you didn't like everything on the lineup, you just went because you'd discover new bands.
Yes,
and
just walking from stage to stage, you discover new bands.
Yeah, and I don't know, it was just really cool. And having the Ferris wheel in the middle of the field was so cool. So now you're working on a number of different things, as per usual, but I guess most importantly, one that's coming up this Sunday.
Yes, so Milk and Honey Festival.
Yes, and this is the second year.
It is the second year, yes.
And this year it's at Silo Park.
Yeah, so how that happened was, so just to take you back to last year, me, Julia Dean, Zelani Perkis, who is the bass player in Alameno P, so that's how I know Lani, and Julia and I and then Lani independently had this idea about doing a female festival, and Lani caught whiff of it and then contacted us, and then so we put on Milk and Honey in celebration of International Women's Day, which was on Friday last year, and we thought we would do something different where we had it multi-city, multi-venue, multi-city. So we had 6 gigs over 4 cities all on the same night, and it was great. It was a huge success, and we were really happy, and we were like, yay, next year it's on a Saturday, and so we can do that again, and didn't realise it was leap year, so this year it's on a Sunday. So when we realised that, we were like, oh, what are we going to do? And at that time that we had realised it, Amy Pollard, who does all of the Silo sessions for at Silo Park, contacted us saying she would like to do a collaboration on International Women's Day at Silo Park. And we thought, this is perfect. It's a Sunday. We can do a day event. It's, you know, midday to 6 p.m. It's free. It's all ages. And it's this Sunday. It's come around so quickly.
Yeah. So cool that it can be all ages and during the day, so like whole families can go along.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like very inclusive. It's got amazing artists.
Yeah, we're really proud of this lineup.
Yep. Do you want to tell us?
So we've got Jess B, Tali, She's So Rad, Muji, Disciple Party, and 2 of the Girls Rocks Aotearoa, along with awesome DJs Phoebe Falconer, Eva Choi, and also the Gingham Twins, which is Charlotte Ryan, that used to work here at BFM, and Alice Murray, who also used to work here at BFM.
That's so cool. Yeah. What a lineup. It's so exciting.
Yeah, we just really tried to be inclusive across everything, you know, rainbow, ethnic,
yeah,
genre.
I really love the 3 key aims that
yes,
you have.
So our 3 key aims is to celebrate the incredibly talented women who work in all facets of the New Zealand music industry, and that's because we wanted to also put a focus on the behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, all our crew are female, the sound person's female, the lighting person's female. Last year, actually, the female lighting engineer at the power station got a job out of
that's
doing
amazing.
It. Yeah, so that was fantastic. And just we believe that you need to actually see women in these positions to realise that it's a job that you can do. Like when I became a music manager, it was because I came and I worked with a female music manager when I was at Virgin Records, and it just hadn't crossed my mind for some reason, you know. And and that completely feeds into the next one, to make female artists and crew visible to younger women, and to provide a safe and inclusive, respectable festival and gig environment. And if you read any of the reviews from last year's festival, which were all in venues, which we've all had experiences of not feeling safe, every single one of those reviews commented about how safe the environment was, which was just such a major for me, you know, for all of us. So, yeah, we were really, really happy.
That's so cool. Do you find it difficult to find, female staff to work behind the scenes?
No, not at all.
Yeah. Because I know sometimes, with other festivals where they say there might be, you know, they don't have a very female-led lineup or whatever, that it's because they can't get hold of female-led bands and like they're not available and stuff like that. So I just wondered what it was like about behind the scenes. But I always feel like there's heaps of people.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, on the female artist point, like last year we had nearly 30 artists play over those 6 gigs. So, and all but one sold out. So, you know, there's a lot out there and they pull crowds.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
So, and I guess like what I think is cool is, yeah, it's free. You've got other things going on at the festival as well.
Yes, we've got food trucks. Yeah. And so they are all either, you know, like female involved food trucks, and the fact that they could be, you know, a husband-wife team or et cetera. And there's going to be kids' activities. So it's going to be a fun day out.
That's really
cool. In the sun, I checked the weather. It's going to be fine.
It's going to be fine. Wear sunblock.
Still, yes, wear sunblock. Wear a hat. We've got shade and all that as well. Like we've got those Red Bull wigwams and all that, yeah, to provide shade. But, yeah.
Yeah, oh, that's cool. So that's this Sunday to celebrate International Women's Day. It's Sunday the 8th of March.
And can I just do a little shout-out to SAE and APRA AMCOS as well for helping us with, and Red Bull for helping us put it on.
Yes, APRA AMCOS, who puts on this little feature too. Yay!
Yay them!
Very supportive of the industry. So, yeah, that's this Sunday, 8th of March at Silo, midday to 6 p.m. Jess B, She's So Rad, Imugi, Disciple Party, two performers from Girls Rock Aotearoa, and it's all free.
Yeah, it's going to be so good.
So good. Well, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thanks, Penny, for having me.
It's been nice chatting. Yay. Now, we're going to play an artist that's close to your heart, close to mine.
Yes. And I realise this actually. Susan the Banshees is just like, I just idolised her as a teenager and just loved everything that she did, and may or may not have completely underage snuck into a gig of hers at Main Street.
Really?
Yes.
Was that when Robert Smith was on?
It's when Robert Smith was on bass. Yeah.
Wow. How was that?
It was so, so good. Like, she played 2 nights at Main Street. Yeah.
Wow. But, yeah. That is so, I've just got this magical, like, idea of what Main Street was like.
It's probably not as magical as you think, but
I can imagine.
But I did see some really good bands there.
Yeah, I imagine it's probably like quite. Oh, I remember the Glue Pop having like the carpet being really wet.
Yeah, same. Yeah. That's Main Street.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much. And this is Susie and the Banshees with Hong Kong Garden.
Yay.
Another friendly face to make life a little richer. People in your neighbourhood on 95BFM. Thanks to APRA AMCOS NZ.